This is Monocle on Design, our weekly look at the best in architecture, craft, furniture and fashion. I'm Nick Manise. On today's program, it's a menswear fashion special. We meet a photographer who documents street style around the globe and hear dispatches from Pitti Uomo in Florence and Milan Men's Fashion Week. All that coming up right here on Monocle on Design on Monocle 24. Do stay tuned. Welcome to today's show. I'm joined down the line by Nolan Giles, who you're used to hearing on this end of the mic, but we're switching roles today and maybe a little bit going forward. Nolan, where in the world are you right now?
Hi, I'm in Copenhagen, Nick. So I cannot be in the studio recording this, but I can be talking to you down the line. And yes, you are going to be stepping into my shoes a little bit, which is super exciting. How do you feel about hosting this show? And do you really think you can match, you know, what I've delivered over the last year or so?
Look, they're big shoes to fill. And I know, I mean, we work very closely together, and maybe a little bit too confidently as a young writer first joining Monocle, I was quite brazen in telling you that I more or less, or not even more or less, absolutely wanted your job as design editor and now executive editor. And this is just, I guess, the first step in slowly filling those shoes. Like I said, big shoes, so a little bit nervous, but very excited. And I know, obviously, we're working very close together, so I'll have plenty of good advice and guidance from you moving forward.
Well, I love your honesty, Nick, and I'm very excited to be on the other end of the mic because, to be frank, you know, when you were explaining Scottish fashion and all the trips that you were doing while I was sat in the studio, it was a little bit frustrating for me. So maybe I envied you a little bit.
So a nice little bit of a reversal. Well, look, if you're happy for me to become executive editor and you want to slip into a researcher role, then I'm sure we can arrange that.
As long as the pay is the same, I'm happy to do less work.
That sounds good. You said you're out and about. I know you've been sort of, you know, traveling all over Europe to kick off the year. Where are we speaking to?
I am in Copenhagen at the moment, doing a little bit of business up here. And I will be speaking to a few people about what's coming up with the Copenhagen Fashion Week. But before I was here, I have been in Italy. I've been in Florence and Milan for the various menswear fashion events over the last kind of 7 to 10 days. I started off at Pitti Uomo, which is the big menswear trade show, where it's not fashion runway events. I mean, they do have some when, you know, there's no pandemic going on, but this time it was just large halls filled with brands, a lot of them smaller independent brands, showcasing what they think is going to be interesting in men's wardrobes this year. So I was there for a couple of days all by myself. I usually have a bit of a crew, but we did a bit of a smaller dispatch this year, seeing as it was a slightly smaller event than usual.
Well, I guess I'm curious. Can you tell us a little bit about who's going to these events? So you mentioned that the brands are there, but who's actually attending them, and why is it important for, I guess, people and brands to turn out?
Well, obviously there's journalists like me, Nick, but journalists are definitely not the most important people here for business. It's not like the fashion shows, which we'll get into a little bit later on, where, you know, there is a sense of importance for the press being there and documenting everything that's happening because there's a showcase of a new season and a new collection's worth of clothes. This is really for people who are buying. So these might be, you know, a great independent showroom in Milan or further afield in Copenhagen, and they're there to essentially discover, I guess, interesting new brands and also kind of speak to the companies that are already supplying them with clothes and fashion, because obviously it needs to change every year or every half year with the seasons. And this is really the snapshot of the whole industry that provides where fashion is heading. And people are able to kind of experience that and actually talk to the owners of the businesses that are supplying, you know, gloves or hats or shirts or even fabrics. They're all there, and it's all kind of about the conversations and the business deals.
I mean, can you tell us about some of those conversations? Who did you speak to there on the ground, whether that's, you know, a designer or a company director or another buyer?
Well, I spoke to lots of people, but my favorite conversation, which we're going to air on the show, was with the team from Connolly. They are a British brand. They have an incredible space in London. They do sell fashion from other companies, but they also have their own line of clothing as well. This is what they were showcasing at Pitti. Isabel, the founder, she usually goes to Pitti to discover brands and to create relationships with new suppliers. This time around, she decided it was the perfect platform to launch what she's calling Connolly Sporting.
Connolly, we've always liked to work with brands very closely. You know, they manufacture for us, design things, and they work with us on that. So whether it's gloves, whether it's caps, whether it's a particular shearling or something, we've always had our suppliers here. And for the last 2 years, that's just been impossible. And they've had huge problems. They're small suppliers mostly. You know, they're small family businesses. And so it's been really important, I think, that we're here in person. It's been magical, actually. We're very European-focused at Connolly. Do you know, we don't manufacture in the Far East. We make in normally old-style factories, old family businesses. Do you know, whether it's in the UK or whether it's in France or whether it's in Italy. And we do have a really strong link with Italy. I think that's why Pitti is of real significance for us.
So as a business, I mean, it sounds like it's been very important to you. And like you say, it's not always big names or even big factories or manufacturers. It's often these smaller, almost like mom-and-pop businesses. I mean, are there any really good examples, I guess, over the years of conversations that have turned into good business relationships?
I would say most of them, actually, really. You know, whether it's the glove makers that's sort of sixth generation, probably. Now, the Connolly driving glove is like this sort of iconic piece. And I think they did it for us as a joke initially. Do you know, we did it as a sort of, well, let's try it. And it's just, it's extraordinary. So things like that. Some of the shirt makers, Finamore and Danolis, which sadly doesn't exist anymore, Mindell, all over the world. So it's like a coming together of real cultures. We're always about finding the best at Connolly if we can, you know, so the best shearling, the best trouser cut. Obviously, we do our own collections, but customers love a mix. You know, we don't pretend we do it all. We don't pretend we're tie makers. We don't pretend we're shirt makers. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. We make the shirts for our own collection, the fashion stuff with Odube. But the rest, we tend to source. It's half the fun. It really is. Do you know? And it means you can change things seasonally. We've been asked over the last few years to wholesale, and Connolly really is not set up for wholesale. It's a lifestyle. It's my vision. It's a really personal vision. I know that the team, we need to grow, and it's like finding the way to grow it. We have found that over the years, the pieces that have consistently performed and they're a good entry point piece are what we call the driving collection. So the British knitwear, the car vests, things like that. With Owen here, we decided to really launch this. I wouldn't call it a diffusion line, but it's definitely a very focused, edited collection that we're presenting. And it's a piece that works with anyone's wardrobe. You can match it with, you know, anything. You can match it with Fedele, you can match it with Fox, you know, suits, anything. It doesn't matter. It's something that you wear and becomes part of your constant wardrobe.
You're talking about the space as being so important to the brand because you're face-to-face with your customers. I guess here it's maybe a little bit like that too in terms of the buyers. You're making good relationships, hopefully, on your second day here. What's the experience been like?
It's been brilliant. Meeting the buyers and actually being able to go through the collection physically away from the trials and tribulations of Zoom. Spending some time describing why this cashmere is the best, why these zip pulls are, you know, carefully designed from, you know, the original chassis plate from a 1904 Rolls-Royce, which sounds easy to translate over screen, but you've got to have it physically. And also seeing the eyes of the buyer, knowing that that's the person that's going to be saying what you're saying here today at Pitti, and having them believe that. I'm Owen Zeal, and I'm the head of wholesale.
This Zoom experience that we've all had, it's interesting when you say like the eyes of the buyer. There's something that is lost in that conversation, even if it's face to face on Zoom. It's like there's this whole other level of conversation going on when you're face to face, right? Do you really feel that in a place like Pitti?
Absolutely. And that's one of Pitti's strengths. And that's why people keep coming back. Long may it continue.
It's very interesting because one of the first buyers said, "Where's the rest of the collection? We know Connolly, where is it?" And I went, "It's not for sale." This is particularly relevant to what this fair is about, what we feel is relevant to most shops. To be honest, to try and wholesale Connolly with its antiques, it would be impossible, do you know? And that's more of a franchise thing, they're talking about that. It's really interesting because for us it is the first time we've actually attempted to grow it as a brand, really, I suppose. Absolutely. you know, we're on the cars, we're on Ferrari, we're, you know, we have that. And we have a very interesting sort of made-to-order system for that. We're very specific about how we want the leather to be shown, how it should be treated, where it comes from, all these ethical things. And actually, it's almost the same way with doing the wholesale. It's not made to order as such, but it is very, very edited, isn't it? And I think it's not just letting it go out willy-nilly and bits from here and bits from there. It's not like a podium thing. It's, this works. If you take three pieces, it'll work. Mm-hmm. It'll look really good together. You know, whereas if you took three pieces from three different floors at Connolly, it might lose itself. So it's about really trying to retain our identity at the same time.
So who's your ideal customer, the ideal retailer where we're going to see this collection?
Oh, that's a big question. anyone that sees eye to eye with us and understands what we're about. There are a few out there. It will feel right when they come onto the stand and we talk about the collection and we hear about the brands that they've already got and the respect that they pay them. We'll be without question.
People with their own vision, do you know, because they respond. That's where we're getting the response. It's going to be that, you know, and they say, oh yeah, I can mix that with this brand that I've bought or this piece of clothing I make. And I think that's going to be it.
Isabel Etedgi there, founder of Connolly. And before that, Owen Zeal, the head of wholesale for the brand. Now, Nolan's staying with us on the line here. Where are we going to next, Nolan? I know you were at Pitti Uomo in Florence. Did you move elsewhere in Italy?
I did. I got on the Frecciarossa straight after Pitti Uomo and headed up to Milan Men's Fashion Week. Nick, I have an incredibly tough job, don't I?
You really do make it sound so difficult. I don't know why you... To be honest, I don't know why you put up with it.
Well, someone has to do it. And at the moment, it's me. And, you know, being in Zurich, it is quite easy to nip down to Italy, not just for shopping and for restaurants, but also for some serious work, which is what I did at Milan Menswear. So essentially, this is the platform where all the big Italian brands showcase their menswear collections for the year or for the autumn winter collection, which comes out at the end of the year. Now, a lot of labels like Gucci and Armani didn't do a physical show, but there were a number that did, and these were big brands too. So we had Prada doing something very special. They're headed up creatively now by Raf Simons, the famous Belgian designer, and Miuccia Prada, who's obviously been there a while. And there was no expense spared in what they produced. They even recruited some top American actors to walk with the fashion, and they made a big splash there, which really highlights the importance of these events, these physical events and these fashion shows. You know, there's huge amounts of media there. There are buyers there from around the world. Obviously, it's a little bit more difficult to get to Milan, but there was plenty happening.
So this is more about, I guess, showcasing designers' talents to, you know, consumers as much as buyers. Were there any other standouts other than Prada? Who else did you go and see and talk to?
Yeah, the other nice aspect of Milan Menswear is going to the showrooms or to specific spaces to see collections through appointments, which are a little bit more intimate. These tend to be smaller labels, not necessarily, you know, independent or super tiny, but, you know, not as mega as Prada and Gucci. And there's a lot of beautiful, you know, suiting that's made in Italy, a lot of amazing tailoring, and there's a large number of brands that really specialize in this, one of which is Brioni, who's a bit of a favorite at Monocle. Their tailoring is, you know, very high end, but also quite relaxed at the same time. These are pieces that you can wear, you know, on the weekend to a drinks event and then to the office the next day. They're super durable, super beautiful. And they're being led by Norbert Stumpfel, who I chatted to at their showcase.
For me, I'm super happy that we are back to a presentation again, because when we did the lookbook presentation over the internet, you just miss a lot of these beautiful fabrics. You know, some of the fabrics, when you touch them, you have really the feeling of goosebumps, you know, because they're so extremely beautiful. The touch is all about what we are talking about in Brioni. It's really like this personal luxury. You feel like you're enveloped in a cloud of feel-good factor, you know. In terms of design, we don't do anything. I mean, of course, I work on silhouette. I want to make our men look as modern as possible, but there's not really design work. It's really like a very design work which is almost hidden away. So I would like Brioni men to be seen on the street as he looks like great, but that's it. But nobody knows it's Brioni, so this is what I love, you know? For the evening, we are going completely the different approach because it's part of our history. And Brioni was, you know, one of the avant-garde designers in its day. And it would use really strong fabrics, you know, when it's time, when there was like ivory and black. And the height of fashion was a navy blue. They introduced like yellow and women's jacquards and all of embroideries and all of that, you know. It was like groundbreaking at the time. And this is in our archive. And what you see here is tame compared to our archive. You know, if you look at this color and think it's shocking, I mean, this one would be combined yellow with an orange lining and all of that, you know. So there's a real heritage as well in there. And I think it's nice to really show to our clients that this is the starting point of Brioni, that this really daring menswear brand. Now we consider Brioni as, of course, of the most sophisticated men wear our clothes, but also this eccentricity is part of our history as well.
And how much is that, I guess, coming out of the pandemic, people really, really wanting to go for it, I guess, in the way they dress? Is this a real thing? People talk about it in terms of, you know, evening wear like this, really dressing up formally and having fun.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we have seen it already last year in the Oscars. We have the guy in the 24-karat gold suit, you know, and of course, people are ready to go out again and having a good time. You know, this is, it's almost like a dream. It's like so far away, but it's, I want to still show it and you know, introduce the women's wear as well, introducing a lot of sustainable fabrics as well. So this is really like, you want to, you know, as this group of people having a nice evening, I don't know if it's a New Year's evening, somebody lets the girl in, he was sitting there, they're having a fun time, you know, and that's how you want to have a nice party again. So it's a dream, of course, but I hope soon we can have those things again.
But the whole experience is quite dreamlike as you kind of step into this old building. For our listeners, you know, take us through the experience. You've got projections, you've got this beautiful old architecture, and then, of course, you have the clothes on these models.
Yes. So it was really like to bring Rome a little bit to Milan, to this presentation, because Rome is such a big part of our everyday life. I live there now for 3 years, and we are surrounded by this old decadence, and I wanted to show that as well. And this place was the perfect building to show that, you know. And you see,
how did you find the building, first of all?
And what really lucky, you know, we're looking for places which, you know, we only show for Brioni, almost like Brioni opens doors for you, because this place will be, it was just the perfect timing, because afterwards they will become offices and nobody ever seen it. So it was like a palazzo, which was, the windows were open, there was pigeons living in here, so it's kind of nice, you know, to really show this decadent, rundown feeling, but in a very, very sophisticated way. So remember Rome from it a little bit.
And obviously the important news, I guess, is that you are introducing women's wear and you've got these amazing pieces. And I'm here with my colleague Kyoko and she's kind of going crazy over them at the moment.
Well, thank you.
Tell us about the decision to do this, how you're going to present them. And I understand they're kind of almost like a special order system.
Yeah. We have a few women's clients coming into the store and they are wanting, or they're buying very small men's sizes, but we want to really cater to them now in a more specific way, and we want to, you know, offer them a bespoke service, and with those kind of garments they will be available in the most important stores. They can really try them on and then have a bespoke women's wear for them. It's something very new, and there was a lot of requests from our customer. It's such a easy extension to our menswear. It feels like very normal. We want to offer this handmade and this caring for the clothes also to our female customers. That's all what we want. We want to share this feeling of personal luxury also to the women. And I think there's a really big lack in fashion today where all this tailored clothes for women doesn't exist on this kind of level, I would say.
And just in terms of your offering here, you know, we're at Milan Fashion Week.
Yeah.
It's amazing to be here, like we were talking about before, and actually see clothes presented physically.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've been to some showrooms and there's just so much being presented. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is an Italian take on menswear, obviously, that you kind of see throughout. But what kind of makes your work special, and how do you kind of try to kind of tailor what you're doing away from, you know, lots and lots and lots of stuff here, you know, if you know what I mean. To make it feel more special and elevated, I guess.
Definitely. Brioni used to be like the benchmark of Italian men's fashion. And I think it's, you know, bringing Brioni back to this kind of level where people talk about Brioni is important, of course. But for me, always the starting point is how is the modern man dressing? When I see a person on the street and dressed in this way, I think I would say, oh my God, he's dressed in a very nice way. So that is Brioni afterwards. It's amazing. You know, sometimes I see people wearing some of the garments on the street and I'm like so happy. And sometimes like, oh my God, he's wearing Brioni. You know, I know it. And it's like, he looks incredible. So I get goosebumps and like, this is such a nice thing to see. The difference to other menswear things, I think we are really working on this modernity, on constant innovation, on really looking what other people are doing, how people are dressed, you know, to really get this little cultural differences, you know, and not being only stuck in the past. Yeah. So this is really important.
Norbert Stumpfel there, design director at Brioni. Now, we're going to broaden our discussion out beyond the designers and talk about the people actually attending these shows. Nolan, you're a snappily, sharply dressed man, and street style, I guess, has become significant at these sorts of events. People love documenting them. People love talking about what people actually attending these shows are wearing. Maybe to start with, can you tell us a little bit about what you were wearing? I mean, are you dressing up? Are you peacocking a little bit? Or are you trying to do something a little bit more subtle and understated?
No way, Nick Minnis. There is literally no possible way for a humble design journalist like myself to compare with these insanely smart, I'm not saying insanely dressed, fashionistas that you do see at these events. You know, there's this such an emphasis now on influencer culture and the amount of photographers. I swear there was more photographers at Milan Fashion Week taking pictures of people on the street and out the front of shows than there were actual journalists that had flown in for the event. It's getting a bit out of control. Nick Manise, what do you think about this situation? I don't know how often you're kind of wandering around the streets of London and getting snapped for fashion weeks, but I do understand that you have been a model in your time.
I have been a model in my time. Thank you very much for bringing that up on air, and I will gladly send a paycheck away shortly. I quite like this in terms of looking for inspiration to see how people, I guess, are pairing maybe unexpected items of clothing or using colours or patterns or prints in a way that perhaps I wouldn't expect. I mean, there is certainly that I guess I'm calling it the peacocking element to it, which I do enjoy. It's people taking risks, and then you know, that gets documented by these photographers. Maybe it's gone too far the other way as a result of social media, but I certainly think there's perhaps some merit in it. And there's probably why there's sartorialist photographers who are out there on the streets trying to capture this. I know you've recently spoken to a Sydney-based writer and fashion photographer about this very thing. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think before we discuss my chat with Giuseppe Santamaria, who has created an amazing book and also an amazing body of work relating to street style, it's maybe interesting to kind of think about or talk about what's happening with this world of street style at the moment. Obviously, the sartorialist and these incredible photographers that were taking photos of people just dressing really, really well on the streets. I'm not even sure how long ago this was. I'll start showing my age, but I feel like it was, you know, 10 or 15 years ago when this craze for street style photography started seeping into the internet. It was really an amazing time for style because there was so much expression and so much choice in what people were wearing, and it was kind of an expression of themselves and how they would like to dress. My concern a little bit is that when you do go to these fashion shows and fashion events, there's a whole lot of kind of subtle or not so subtle marketing going on from the brands that are supplying these influencers or these well-dressed people with the clothes that are, you know, photographed and shared online and seen by hundreds of thousands or even millions of people. And that's kind of why I like Giuseppe's work, because he's dedicated to his craft. He's, I mean, in this conversation that we have, you'll hear he's been in Sydney for a while. But he just talks about, you know, the growth and change in street style just in one city. But he's also, you know, over 10 years, which this book documents, has really kind of honed in on what makes dressing for men good and stylish. And it can be so different.
Well, let's hear now from Giuseppe Santamaria, the photographer behind the book, Men in This Town, A Decade of Men's Street Style.
I think every photographer wants to see their work in print. So, and you know, me working in magazines, I kind of love designing them. So I used Tumblr as the cheapest platform to kind of be able to produce something that looked kind of magazine-like, you know, wasn't looking like a blog or anything like that. I tried to kind of put my little stamp on that. But then I was probably... it was 3 years into it when I actually got my first book deal with it. And from there, I kind of ended up going on a big world trip and gathering photos from different towns that I kind of thought, you know, would be a great place to actually photograph men with distinctive styles. This was in the last 10 years. And so much has changed online for inspiration when it comes to menswear and fashion in general. There wasn't necessarily a distinct look in each city anymore. You know, everything has become the same looking, but different cities and different countries end up doing it their own way. And there are certain details that make it interesting. And that's what I was kind of documenting these last 10 years. The idea of doing kind of a 10-year retrospect, basically, of what men's style was like for the last decade. And, you know, there were these distinctive trends from a sartorial kind of feel to streetwear and the luxury of streetwear and everything in between. So it's kind of showing how menswear kind of evolved into what it is right now, where I think men are just having fun with fashion again, probably in comparison to how it was in the 70s, you know, not kind of having gender stereotypes dictate what they wear.
What's happening at the moment? Because it does feel like there is this amazing eccentricity going on in the way that men dress. Where is that coming from, and how have you kind of seen it evolve?
Well, I think the biggest evolution that I've seen it in is my own hometown here in Sydney. When I started Sydney, it's a beach city. So like thongs, t-shirt and shorts were kind of like the go-to because it's warm and it's kind of a beach culture here. So to see that from 10 years ago, grow into what I'm seeing now. And especially, I mean, I've been in Sydney for the last 2 years now because of the pandemic and been focusing my photography on obviously my surroundings. And you definitely see kind of the change where I could go down walking in the CBD and kind of capture at least 20 to 30 people in a day that have this fun style. There's lots of color. There's lots of different materials. There's lots of flamboyancy. There's just a variety. And it's not just one note, you know, it's guys are using fashion to express themselves in more ways than they ever have. Where before it was, you know, the Australian culture of just being a beach bum and kind of going with that style. And then if you're going to dress up, it's just those cliche kind of ways of wearing a suit that's probably paired with a wacky bow tie and just kind of doing things that, you know, are a bit cliche, where I think Sydney guys, Australian guys are finding their own way, which is exciting to photograph.
And why do you think that is? And also, I'm guessing if, you know, there's an amazing moment for men's style in Sydney and Australia, there must be kind of great things happening in the world of fashion design over there and retail.
Yeah, well, I think it's just mainly because of the exposure of the internet. What you saw with fashion 20 years ago here was only kind of through magazines and what you kind of were going to feed kind of the audience from a fashion point of view, where now kind of guys were able to see what was going on around the world in various genres that they might be interested in. So it's no longer just kind of, oh, this is the way that it's meant to be because this is what fashion is. There's so many subcultures that you can look into and research and follow online that the world is a big place and you have so much inspiration to kind of grab from now. And I think that's happened around the world, not just here in Australia. You're seeing that, oh, there isn't just one way to be a man or how to dress like a man. It's there's a lot more to it.
And just finally, what do you think has been
the recipe for your longevity in doing this? Because we have kind of seen a bit of a rise and fall maybe in street style photography. And then, you know, we've seen the rise of Instagram maybe taking over that place of Tumblr. There's been a lot of change and disruption in the way that men's style has been documented. But you've obviously always been there and you're releasing this book to kind of celebrate it. What are the keys to success for you?
Well, I think it's just to stick through it. You know, so many people want that instant gratification sometimes, especially now in kind of the age that we're living in. I've always looked up to Bill Cunningham and I loved the way that he managed kind of his career and kind of was in it for the long run. And just, he kept it simple. I like to think that I keep it simple in the way that, you know, if I could just go out, have my camera and travel where and when I can to photograph men and their style, you know, I'd be happy. And then if I could do these other little projects like creating magazines or publishing books and doing podcasts, they're the fun things that can change it up all the time. But the basis of it, it's always going to be men's style, showcasing it, how it evolves over the years. And hopefully, yeah, I can keep doing it for the next 20, 30 years. Who knows?
That was the Sydney-based writer and fashion photographer Giuseppe Santamaria there. His book, Men in This Town, A Decade of Men's Street Style, is published by Smith Street Books and is available at all good bookstores now. And that's all the time we have on today's show. If you're keen for even more design-related listening, then catch our five-minute midweek sister show, Monocle on Design Extra. That airs every Thursday. Today's show was produced by Charlie Fillmore-Court and May Lee Evans, who edited the show with assistance from Chris Ablakwa. I'm Nick Manise. Thank you very much for listening and goodbye.